Welcome to Minority Corner, where we take an introspective look at the world through an intersectional lens. I'm James, he, him. I'm a queer political activist, actor, comedian, self-proclaimed sexy blurred. That's a black nerd. And each week, I'm joined in the corner by other fabulous minorities and some allies tackling the news, pop culture, politics, media, entertainment, and history with a little self-care, self-love sprinkled throughout, all for our own personal and collective empowerment. Well, it's a brand new episode, and we've got, she's back, we love her. I think it's her third, fourth time on the podcast. It is Samantha Incessi, a third culture linguophile who co-hosts Masculinity Podcast, a show that's now part of a Healthy Masculinities Podcast Network hosted by Next Gen Men. Go off, Samantha Incessi. We're so glad that you're here. So with all of that, so glad that Samantha is here because we're going to need her help to break down all the sexism that is raging all up in our faces. It must be a day that ends in Y because it is everywhere, from the outfits that are making women wear in sports and then they find them, and then to even letting Simone Biles take care of her mental health to do what she needs to do, to even up in the entertainment world, it is Disney versus Scarlett Johansson and we have taken sides. And in the main corner, it is a news story that is the blend of classism and privilege and racism and homophobia all intersecting together in this story that most people probably missed out. It is the conviction of murderer Ed Buck, the murderer of queer black men in Los Angeles. It is quite the story, and we talk about it. And then Samantha, as usual, sent us through a deep dive of fuckery through hip-hop, which we love hip-hop, but we gotta side-eye you and call you out. And this time it is DaBaby and his comments and views about our beloved Lil Nas X, who is challenging us all, myself included, with our own fears and our own insecurities, and just blowing up the homophobia that is existing in hip-hop and what we can do to make sure that things get better. All right? It is an all-new Minority Corner happening right now. Let's get into it. So Monica Lewinsky has aged gracefully, as we were just talking about off-air. Cold open, hot, here we are, Samantha. She really has. And I feel like it's one of those cases where the times have caught up, like, to her. She didn't change. Like, Monica Lewinsky is still just Monica Lewinsky. We caught up to who she was. Like, just think about, like, how sexist the 90s were. I don't think we realized it was, because we were under this, like, guise of, like, you know, girl power, and there was, like, I don't know, like, there was, like, you know, Buffy and Charlie's Angels, but when you look at those, it was all through, like, very much the male gaze, and so it was this false perception of, you know, this, and I'm not, just from looking back at just like the treatment of women, and you know what was going on, you're living it, but I just
but even then, it's like, honestly, when you look back, you know, I'm just as part of the patriarchy as men are, even though I'm kind of on the receiving end. And it's like, sure, you think about somebody like Britney Spears, like Mariah Carey, mm-hmm, people who we were like, oh my goodness, like they had a breakdown, you know, they lost it or whatever. And you look back on that now, what we know about mental health, and I'm just like so embarrassed that I was like, damn, like I didn't realize it was like that. Like I just didn't realize that it was like that, you know?
Yeah, totally. So, I mean, again, like now, and it's interesting, she's now getting her roses and her flowers and stuff like that. And I think Ryan Murphy is doing, because, you know, he did like the O.J. Simpson, his American Crime Story is like his other anthology series, his American Horror Story, then American Crime Story. He did O.J. Simpson, Assassination of Giovanni. And the next one is going to be about the like Bill Clinton, Monica Lewinsky. And it's based on like her book. She's involved in the production of it. So she's going to get to have more of her story. But like you said, like so many of these women, all those women that you just named, were just sort of the butt of these jokes and just living, obviously, too, in systems and structures that were designed and dominated by men. And you mentioned, you know, something like mental health. These women just really just trying to do their best in these, like, you know, male ass structures. And then something that on the same lines of when you don't realize how deep you are in the patriarchy, let's think about what's going on in women's sports for a second, right? So there was like two moments. There was women's sports teams. The Norwegian women were fined for that they weren't going to play. They refused to wear bikinis for their beach handball teams. And isn't until that came up, and then Pink snaps to Pink with tweeted that she's going to pay.
Love Pink. Love Pink. She's consistent. I love her so much.
That is very true. There's one thing that Pink is. She is consistent. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, she has her issues with alcohol, but who doesn't? Who doesn't, Pink?
Literally, who doesn't? Okay.
As a friend once said to me, sexuality is like alcoholism. Everybody's a little bit something on that spectrum. It's a spectrum. You know? We're all somewhere on it, and we're, you know, you're just somewhere there on the spectrum.
Wow. Maybe the rappers will get it if we explain it that way. Okay.
See. Okay. We'll put a pin in that because I know we're going with that for later on in the show. We got some good stuff hanging in there. So they were fined like, you know, $1,700 or 1,500 euros or something. Anyways, because they're like, we're not going to wear these bikinis. So they were going to wear shorts, just some sensible shorts. They were still shorts.
They were still
and they
shorts.
Got fined. And it's so wild to me because I just was like, yeah, you're right. What do them wearing bikinis have to do with them playing volleyball? I don't understand. And then the Norwegian gymnastics team, in solidarity and protest, they wore like some similar outfits of what you would see kind of the men wearing. It was like they weren't wearing like, you know, a bathing suit, essentially, all up in their business, right? Which is like they're there to do a job. What are these sexy outfits have anything to do with them tumbling and flipping around? Like, it's so sensible. It makes sense. Like, yeah.
Yeah, and honestly, I, you know, it, kind of on this conversation around, like, making people do things that they are not comfortable doing, it's like, as the athlete, they should be telling you what's the best thing for their performance.
100%.
Like,
yes.
Why are you telling them what to wear?
You know? Those outfits had nothing to do with them playing. If anything, they were a hindrance. And I would say, actually, you know, I think all the men should wear. I don't want them in thongs. I think thongs are disgusting on everybody. I mean, no offense if you like to wear a thong. I just know, like, in the gay community, we bypass the thongs. We just do jack straps because it's like, I just want to see the butt. I don't need to, like, because, like, what's that little, like, floss hiding? There's no mystery. I know what's underneath there. It's a fucking crack. Like, it's like, ooh, what's there? Or is it because they wear a thong, like, you can show it on TV or something? Like, what is the deal? It's uncomfortable. I'm like, if I see one a thong, I'm like, oh, they're uncomfortable. That doesn't, like, get me going. Maybe that's somebody else's thing. I'm not here to yuck anybody's yum. But I just think, like, so anyways, I think the men and volleyball should have to wear just jock straps out there. Just even it out.
Okay.
Ladies, go back to wearing shorts. I think we just need to sexify some of the men's uniforms a little bit more.
I agree. I think we absolutely need to do that. And also, just a special mention for the unitards still not being like baggy clothing to wear. Like, they're in unitards. Shit's still skin tight. I mean, you still
are getting... Yeah, just like, in case there was some... just because there was some insult in his basement getting ready to tweet at us about, like, oh, I'm going to see... Don't worry. Their outfits are still skin tight. Yeah. They're just covered more so from head to toe. Still skin tight.
Still
so
skin
don't
tight.
You worry.
You can still see the definition still... of... Yeah, like, it's, you know, you'll be all right.
I just found this out, that the women's gymnastics do different sports than the men's gymnastics. Like, they do different
events.
Didn't realize this. And I'm like, oh, you're right. I can't think about the last time, if ever, I've seen men's, like, ribbon dancing. I think it's called rhythmic gymnastics.
That's true. Yeah.
And it's one of those things you don't even think about because, like, everything happens so fast. You're like, oh, look at her dancing with those ribbons. And they're like, oh, okay. Oh, look, that man twirling on those things. He has to hold himself up and on the rigs and twirl around. And they're like, oh, look at her. She's skipping around, dancing to Single Ladies. Like, and they have to put in, like, moves. Like, the men just get to do, like, flips. But the women, they're like, you have to flip to music and make it a routine.
With a prop.
But the men just.
With a prop. With a
yes, but even like the floor routines, the women have to, like, do, like, some choreography and, like, do Shakira, you know, and the men are just like, they just cartwheel. I personally, again, even in the playing field, I want to see the men dancing to Shakira as well. I want to see what they're going to do. Maybe some Lil Nas X into the routine. Like, please, I think, please, even because, like, please. It's not like in figure skating, it's all even. Like, everybody, like, is doing the, everyone's doing the moves.
Yeah.
Everyone's doing the same choreography, like, same sort of music and glitter. It's, everything's gay. It's gay for everybody. It's gay for the ladies. It's gay for the dudes. We look at it, we're like, oh, yes, I'm watching gay things and I love it. So yes. I just think, like, gymnastics, gay it up, lean into it, and it's fine. Everybody just, everyone just be gay in gymnastics.
Festive. Festive and expressive. It's,
okay, that's a better, that's a, okay, you're right. Yeah, it's festive. It's a better word. But you know what? We gays be festive.
Hey, so hey, exactly.
Well, I want to talk to you. The other component of what's been happening in the Olympics is our dear, our sis, Simone Biles, all the snaps. She's still the GOAT, and I want to commend her because you were mentioning something about, like, you know, mental health and women and stuff, and we don't give them that. Like, now mental health is coming up, and I must commend this next generation who's just like, I'm not playing these games. Like, even Naomi Osaka is like, I'm not doing your press conferences. I'm here to play tennis. I'm done. And meanwhile, Serena's like, I didn't know I could do that.
And that's the thing.
We didn't know.
The youth
we didn't
will
know.
Set us free. Absolutely.
But it's because, I will say, it's on the coattails of the work that, like, Billie Jean King and, you know, Serena Williams and Venus had done, where these, like, have it stretched it out. But anyways, they're, like, kicking those glass ceilings and being like, you know, I'm not doing this, right? And, you know, all these people who are incredibly untalented had everything to say about Simone Biles taking some mental health to say, and it was very terrifying when you read the story about when she calls it the twisties, mm-hmm. where she, the reason why she took herself out of the competition is because she was giving the twisties. If you think about it, you know, she was talking about how it was like an out of body experience. She didn't know where she was as she was flipping.
Yeah.
That's terrifying. And you see the things that she does where it's like, she defies, like, human nature and doesn't even get credit for it. Cause the judges will be like, oh, that was too dangerous, and we can't give you points for that.
And honestly, she should have cut then. Like, right then and there, yeah. when they decided that they were going to start penalizing her because she's the only one who can do yes. what she can do, which the last time I checked, that's literally just called greatness. You're literally
you.
At the forefront of the Olympics. You're competing worldwide.
It.
That should just
yes.
cement you as the best athlete in existence right now. That's all that should do, instead yeah. of being like, no, we have to score her down so we can make other people feel better at the Olympics. At the
yes.
Olympics,
like, they are like Oksana from Russia can't do that, so I'm sorry, Simone. We have to down this down. Susan Susan from Sacramento, she can't do those flips, so I'm sorry, Simone.
So we gotta
you
dock
need to
you.
Water it down.
You imagine
we're gonna dock. That doesn't even, and that's what she would have to do. And so, again, she's already having that pressure. She's navigating the world, black lady, da da da. Plus, all that scandal that they were also, these women were having to go through. Remember with, like, the doctor and, like, the assault stuff that was happening?
God.
So, and then meanwhile, still having to go out there and do the flip, right? And to try to, like, you know, do her country proud or whatnot. And then I couldn't even imagine having to train this past year. I, for one, don't even know why the Olympics are even still happening. I will put that sidebar. Why are they happening?
Especially Tokyo's since, isn't Tokyo having, like, a huge, like, having
record,
huge spikes of...
Record.
I don't... Yeah.
Record-breaking
for Japan as a
numbers.
Country, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But no, but even, yeah, specifically I've noticed, like, in Tokyo, like, record numbers. So you have players from all over the world with various levels of COVID outbreaks happening, coming together in these, like... There's been so many outbreaks. It's insane. So I don't even know why that's happening. Couldn't imagine, like, training this past year underneath the circumstances of this year. And so the focus is, like, and for her to still even, like, show up, come compete, do what she's doing. And then show everyone and their mom who's not talented had something to say about Simone, like, sitting it out.
Oh, my God.
Because she needed to take some mental health for her. And then today, yep. girl shows
yep.
up,
yep.
competes.
Talk about it. Oh, my God.
Snatches that bronze right there, right? She competes and snatches that bronze. And I want to point this out.
People still
Biles. Complained. Okay, but and here's what's wild. So Biles also earned a bronze medal back in 2016 on the Rio Games. So she's like tit for tat, even though she's like, you know, age ain't nothing but a number, like she's still like meeting her stats, snatching the trophies that she needs to do. And with this newest addition to her award collection, she ties Shannon Miller as the most decorated Olympian in American gymnastics history.
Wow.
While each gymnast has 7 medals to her name, Biles has more gold. She has 4 than Miller, who only has 2.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, only, but so I just want to say, like, props to her. She was like, I need to take some time. And it was also smart because the team still went on to go collect silver, I believe. And had she maybe stayed in competing when she knew she wasn't up to what she could do, they maybe wouldn't have gotten silver. So she was really being a real team player. Talk about having to have like death of ego,
yeah,
to say, I need to, that takes a lot.
Oh,
that
yeah.
takes a lot in the Olympics. And you also know everyone's going to have an opinion about it, but you know, for your country that you're trying to up there a rep, that you're going to sidestep in the Olympics. Like, that is a lot.
Yeah. And they shouted out, what was her name? Carrie Hilstrup or Southstrup. She was also a gymnast who competed mm-hmm. with like a broken ankle or something ridiculous.
Oh.
And she won. And everybody was like, yeah, she should have been like this person or whatever. This person had like stopped competing almost immediately after that. She was pressured by all of her coaches, one of whom was, of course, Larry Nassar. And it's like the fact that we're using that as a benchmark to kind of aspire to. As like the measure of what, you know, what it means to be there for your country. And like, of course, over the self, it's telling, unsurprising, of course, unsurprising. But it's just like, mm-hmm. you know, you think about, and then you've got people like Dominique. I mean, I don't know. It's hard for me with the Olympics because I'm like, okay, I want to focus on someone and mental health. But then I also want to talk about Sha'Carri. And I'm just like thinking about all these people
yeah.
who, you know, you've got folks who are, like the double standard, right, is
yeah.
just like so intense with like
mm-hmm.
people who are being barred for smoking pot at the Olympics, even though that's like whoever has done anything faster from smoking weed. And then you've 100%. Got some dude who's got allegations fencing for the United States. I'm just like, what's going on?
Oh, right,
on
the
there?
Guy with all those the sexual harassment charges,
yes.
right? Are you talking about that guy?
Yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah, 100%. Well, and two, it's again the many of the women that you're seeing that are having like Sha'Carri, and there's another one as well. What they have in common, they're women of color. There's just a scrutiny that women of color consistently have, and it's a global experience
yeah.
and a thing. And then taking that thing with Sha'Carri, like her mother, wasn't she just dealing? She was
yeah.
was dealing with her mother had just passed.
Yep.
And like the stress and anxiety that these folks are also having to deal with, like it's just it's again, and also it's just them processing their own experiences and things. And meanwhile, you have these other athletes with like sexual assault allegations,
mm-hmm.
and they're like, nope, everything's fine,
everything
Move
is
on.
Okay,
nothing
and
to see here.
It's pretty good parallel actually to what's going on in music as well, but you know, we'll get to that eventually.
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
Don't look at you chomping at the bits. Chomping at the bits.
I know, a little bit, right?
I do say we actually really see there's a theme of just like the touches of sexism that are just so wildly prevalent, and not even white women are safe from it. Yes, white women,
hey.
It's for you as well.
Hey.
So I want to clear up some stuff because it's so interesting. And this is why you have to read multiple media sources because there is right now it's Scarlett Johansson versus Disney. And I had a friend who just sent me in their article. They were like, oh, my God, I can't believe Scarlett Johansson is like the audacity that she's, you know, suing Disney because she didn't get like all the money that she wanted
so
out
ridiculous.
Of Black Widow. And I was like, let me read a few different things. So, yes, Scarlett Johansson is suing Disney, but it's because they breached her contractual payment structure on Marvel's Black Widow.
Yep.
So before she went to go film the movie, these two entities sat down and said, here's the agreement. And like Scarlett, all the stars do that, especially when you're at a certain caliber. You sit down, you say, this is what my structure. And especially when you tend to be a lead of a film, or a franchise series, a lot of times these actors will not actually, they'll come in at a lower rate. So that way you can come and do the movie. Yep. They'll come in at a lower rate. Yep. And their bonuses or and their payouts won't hit unless the movie makes a certain X amount of money. Mm-hmm. So they bonus off of it. Yep. Most of us have jobs. We also have bonuses attached to our performance. So it's a thing, a capitalistic loophole. It helps us to work harder. It makes it so she's going to make sure she's out there pitching her movie, giving her all. Mm-hmm. She's also a producer on it as well. At the same time, you know, this woman has worked in 9 movies, was literally just a prop for every male writer, director of how they wanted to use her character throughout these movies. She's finally front. They killed her in a ridiculous way.
Oh my God.
It should have been Hawkeye. Justice for Black Widow. But hey, we're getting a movie. She's dead. And, you know, so then, but the, you know, the Ponta replay hit and her contract was based on like, you know, she was going to get her bonuses when it hit like a certain amount of money.
Right.
Disney went ahead. Yes. The Ponta replay is hitting. They kept moving it. The goal, like they kept, you know, moving when it was going to be released. Obviously that makes sense. But they went ahead and they released it simultaneously in theaters and on Disney Plus, and that cut the potential box office earnings, which then cut into a smaller payday for her.
Yep.
And her team had reached out to Disney Plus to say, hey, let's talk about how to renegotiate this. They ignored her. And so then they're like, okay, well then what else are we supposed to do? I feel like they just assumed that she wouldn't say anything.
Which is ridiculous. She's the highest paid actress in Hollywood, isn't she? Or wasn't she like 2 years
she's
ago or something
there.
Like that?
Yeah, I mean, she's
like
up that's there.
Like, why would she not say
and
something?
Listen, I know Scarlett Johansson has done a lot of dumb things, said a lot of dumb things. She played a Japanese woman she shouldn't have. She thought she could play a trans actor. She defended Woody Allen, like, da da da. Aha. But in this, we're just talking about this one instance here, right?
Well, yeah.
Like, that's it.
I mean, honestly.
And I love me some Black Widow.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my love for Marvel movies really runs deep. My thing is, it's like, first of all, yes. The fact that I'm in a position now where I'm like sitting here having to defend Scarlett Johansson is bonkers.
I know. Like, how dare you, Disney? How dare you make us do this? Like, we stand, we're here for the character of Black Widow,
yeah.
But how dare you make us defend problematic ass Scarlett Johansson?
Thank you. Yeah. I'm just like, but it's just like, it's a breach of contract. It's not like she's lying.
Yes.
You know,
nope.
And people are out here like, oh my goodness, I can't believe she's being so unfair because of the pandemic. Sweetheart, Disney is not Mm-mm. hurting. Disney
oh,
is
no.
fine. Like,
yes,
I don't...
and that's what, and here's the thing that I thought like really, because again, depending on what order you read the articles, you read an article, if you read this one first, and this was the first one that I read, and it was like, you know, Disney fires back after Scarlett Johansson tries to sue them, you know, and they said that, you know, it's very callous disregard of Ms. Johansson for the horrific and prolonged global effects of the COVID-19 pandemic. And they stated that she had earned like, you know, $20 million, so putting like her salary on blast, which was like very, like it just... It was almost like a
shame.
Move to try to shame her.
Yeah.
It was a move to try to shame her. And two, the scuttlebutt is Disney Plus had been trying to, there was a fear from day one that they were going to try to release Black Widow on Disney Plus even before the Ponta replay. And because they saw it as like, we need to put content.
What you were saying by Ponta replay.
Oh, the parallelogram? Yeah. I don't call it by its government name. The pterodactyl, it's a new one. When the panini, they been tried when because they were like the scuttlebutt was they were always going to try to put it on Disney Plus because they needed content and they thought this might attract people, but that cuts into what the agreement was,
yes.
You know, and also too, sorry about you mentioned this, they have billions of dollars. They have kept parks open while it shouldn't have been. They also laid off like 32,000 workers. Like they,
oh wow, y'all
have been doing the most.
Yeah,
like that's it's just a lot to be attacking her.
I mean, it is, and honestly, I mean, as a fan who literally was thirsting for Marvel content this whole past year and a half,
yes.
Like the fact
yes.
that you put it off, and still managed to fuck up this contract or whatever, I'm like, so you did all of that just to end up putting it on Disney Plus anyway? Like, why?
Right.
Like, you should have just released it.
I mean, I saw
it
on IMAX and on Disney Plus. You know, it's like, I don't know. I feel like there's such, like, you know, people, this is what their jobs are. This is their art. They entertain you. And it's you got to be willing to people, I feel like they deserve they deserve for the work and the art and the stress and the effort. All those people in the credits, they deserve to get paid at the end of the day.
And that's the bottom line. I mean, I think like you can't have people. I mean, this is everything, right? They just deserve to get paid. But also, Disney breached a contract. You're wrong.
Oh, I've been going back to it. Yeah,
you're wrong.
Right.
You're wrong. It's a straight up contract breach. Like, just pay the pay her. Like, that's it.
You got caught.
It's kind of black and white.
You got caught. You thought she wasn't gonna say anything, and she did. I will commit her because I saw a lot of her press. She was doing it with a smile. She did all the interviews and stuff, and then when it was all said and done, she was like, "And here's the bill.
By the way, many thanks.
I got the receipts."
Best wishes, kind regards.
XOXO.
Yeah, so I don't know about that. I'm really wondering how that's going to shake out. I think that this is kind of like you mentioned something about a tipping point, and I feel like there's a bit going on in the industry in the music industry and in the film industry where women are able to produce things now. They have, you know, they have their own hats, like that they have their own tables, they have their own hats. And so they're not having to rely on men producers to do a lot of things, but a lot of the residual bullshit is still there. And I'm happy that ScarJo, as much as she says problematic shit all the time, is standing up for what's right and paving the way for people to continue. I mean, I wouldn't say paving the way necessarily, but you know,
I mean, her existence as a woman does help to pave the way for others.
Right.
Is she necessarily, you know, a down and out feminist and looking out for women of color as well?
No.
But you know what? Her glass shattering is opening the space for other folks who are able to, you know, follow through in that. And I will say, like, there is this other thing. Hollywood is actually one of the most, out of any industry in the United States, I forget the exact breakdown, but it is the most white male dominant when it comes to the C-suite. So the people who are at the very top of it, the execs at the top of Hollywood, it is still right now very white male dominated. Mm-hmm. So there's just there's a lot of nepotism that happens in Hollywood. There's a lot of work to be done. Oh. So, yeah. Nepotism. Okay, well, what's that about? We're gonna take a little quick little break, but then we're gonna come back. We're gonna dive into a new story that I think that maybe a lot of folks did not necessarily hear about. And it is literally a story where classism and privilege and racism and homophobia all intersect together. So we're gonna get into this story after the break. You probably missed it from the headlines. We'll get into it. So the job market, it's a mess right now. Not a surprise there with everything that is going on. And whether you're looking for a new opportunity or you want to make yourself a stronger candidate for promotion, how you present yourself, it is the key to taking the next step. Rotman's unique virtual executive presence program will equip you all with the tools and tips to engage and influence others in your new role, your new job, as you're going for your new dreams for you. So Rotman has designed this comprehensive virtual program to work around your current schedule, which is perfect because y'all are probably doing so many different things. Schedules are so kinds of chaotic. And with Rotman's executive presence, you can balance working from home, watching the kids, building your emotional intelligence, and making connections with peers across different industries. So this is actually really great. I've been hearing a lot about this in the work industry through the Pond Replay. A lot of people are reassessing what it is that they want to do. And so this seems like a really great opportunity for you all to level up your skills and go down that different pathway for that next career, your next dream. And the University of Toronto Rotman School of Management is one of the best schools in Canada and the world, ranked number 17 for open enrollment executive education by the Financial Times. So visit uoft.me/executive presence. Once again, that is uoft.me/executive presence to learn more and apply. Classes start September 15th. Start your application today to save your seat.
Hi, I'm Annabelle Gurwitch.
And I'm Laura House.
And we're the hosts of Tiny Victories.
My tiny victory is that I sewed that button back on the day after it broke.
We talk about that little thing that you did that's a big deal to you, but nobody else cares.
Did you get that Guggenheim Genius Award?
We don't want to hear from you.
We want little bitty tiny victories.
My tiny victory is a tattoo that I added onto this past weekend.
Let's talk about it.
My victory is that I'm 1 year cancer free.
But my tiny victory is that I took all of the cushions off the couch, pounded them out, put them back, and it looks so great.
So if you're like us and you want to celebrate the tiny achievements of ordinary people, listen to Tiny Victories.
It's on every Monday on Maximum Fun.
All right, so I'm going to put on my journalist hat. A lot of times, you know, y'all know I love my history, but today we are going into journalist hat area. And I actually heard this from a story from Treyvel Anderson, who also has a podcast here on the network, Fanti. They also are now on the daily podcast, What a Day podcast, which I listen to get a lot of my 20-minute news in some chunks. One of their old co-hosts left. Treyvel Anderson, snaps, is one of their new co-hosts. So really awesome to hear their voice. But they brought this story to light about Ed Buck. Did you hear about Ed Buck? Do you know what happened to Ed Buck? Oh, you did hear. Okay, so this story won't surprise you.
But I mean, it's in my line of,
I feel like it was off of a lot of people's radars. I remember hearing a little bit of sprinklings here and there. And so for some folks, this will be just sort of news. And it's not surprising to me when I put all the pieces together why this story was not more mainstreamly covered, and that there are many Ed Bucks out there in the world. So Ed Buck, 66, what happened was he is a small-time white male Democratic donor and political activist who had a fetish for black queer men. He would lure them to his home and essentially inject them with methamphetamines, and they would die. And he was finally convicted last Tuesday by a federal judge on account of 9 felonies, including fatal doses of injecting meth to 2 men, one of which who died was Jamel Moore, who's 26, and then another one, Timothy Dean, who was 55, and they died in his West Hollywood apartment 18 months apart. So the backstory about Ed Buck. So white gay man, very well known in LA, in the area. He was really pretty much known for his vocal activism work in various causes. And I guess back in the 80s, he gained like a lot of attention because he successfully spearheaded this effort to impeach the Arizona's then governor, Evan Meacham. And eventually he was like, okay, done with that. I'm out of here, and made his way to West Hollywood. And he ran for city council back in 2007, unsuccessful. But he still just maintained this presence of relevancy, and he was there in these political circles. So he's built this world around him. Which is, as the story goes on, it's just so terrifying of like what happens if you are rich and you are white and you are male, the things that you can do. And I will say, like, in some states, you being gay is not, it doesn't, in California and in LA, that doesn't matter. That could even just get you into other different circles, elite circles and things like that. So,
right.
And according to the LA Times, from 2009 to 2019, he had donated $525,000 to local and state and federal campaigns focusing on LGBTQ rights and animal rights. So this picture, again, you never know. You never know who is not real. That person that you see that seem like they down with the cause. Oh, okay. Charles. Oh,
so
Charles seems like he good. Mm-mm. You better check those receipts. Look under the rug. Oh my God, it's a body of a, it's a body. Terrible. Terrible.
Your delivery
I'm sorry.
Was funny.
I know. I realize.
No.
That
was
great. My way of dealing with pain and trauma is humor, and it's not
three,
great.
That's right. That's
Somebody
right.
died. This is. I'm sorry. Okay, but the story of how like this really came to light about his just grotesque. I won't even say shenanigans. It's just grotesque behavior. In 2017, the body of Jamel Moore, who 26, was found in Buck's apartment, along with nearly 2 grams of meth, syringes, and other just drug paraphernalia. And then the death was initially ruled an accident by the coroner. And then Moore's family was like, what? That doesn't make sense. It just didn't make sense. Like, again, just adding up all the things, it was like, you know, this older white man and this young black gay black man what's this accidental death? Like, how does this, you know, not, this doesn't make any sense. And it wasn't until the family started raising concerns and then activists started to get, you know, involved of like, how could he have administered those drugs himself? It just didn't make sense. And then the allegations were confirmed in a journal found in Jamel's belongings where he wrote, I quote, "I've become addicted to drugs and the worst one at that. Ed Buck is the one to thank. He gave me my first injection of crystal meth." So,
oh my God.
In the journal. And then 2 years later, another black gay man was found in Buck's apartment. So, I mean, this guy, first one happened, whoopsie doopsie, and the cops just like, oh, accidental death, look the other way. And then Timothy Dean, who's 55, was found in the apartment, also died of a drug overdose. And still, people are like, oh, I guess, you know, shit happens. Black gay men just be dying. And Buck was known for soliciting men, mostly black, and targeted those who engaged in, you know, survival sex work or unhoused. So he was like this predator targeting specific communities and groups of people that, whether it was tied to his fetish, he just knew that if something happened, just how expendable black gay men are. And if you add sex worker or, you know, issues with drugs, expendable. Just literally playthings, toys, you know? Yep. And so, yeah, what were we going to say?
No, I was just going to say that's why some of the conversations that we're having these days about, you know, making sure that we're having that conversation at the forefront is so important, because people don't realize the extent of the vitriol that's being kind of like doled out, like willy-nilly, how that leads directly
right
to this.
Absolutely. 100%. Because like you said, like that, like we set the landscape, right? So clearly these cops, because of the things that people say about any of those asterisks or these, or any of these intersections of those people, black, gay, drug user, sex worker, unhoused, any of those, one or more of those, right? We already have it in the lexicon that these people are worthless or valueless, right? And so the cops will put two and two together. Yeah. I've had interactions with cops of how quickly they just try to piece a story together that fits their narrative or their story. They're looking for the quickest things, and it's oftentimes on stereotypes and the stories that society has continuously told itself. And by society, I mean white, straight men who have created this entire structure. Mm-hmm. Again, you and I didn't even bat an eyelash. We've been watching women play volleyball in bikinis our entire lives. Didn't even think about it until these women were like, why am I wearing these bikinis? And, oh, you're right. Why are you wearing those bikinis? That's nothing to do with what you need to do your job. You're right. But look, it's like, that's the thing. Yep. Racism and the patriarchy, or white supremacy and the patriarchy, it's like this fog. We don't even realize that we're fucking in it. Or it's like being frogs or crabs in a, or whatever you want to boil, in a boiling pot of water that just keeps increasing and you don't even realize that you're in it.
And you don't. The temperature just like slowly.
But you know what? It's getting too hot. We're like, ooh, it's getting too hot.
It is.
But sadly for some, it actually does kill them. And then in this case, because of all these intersections of the system of, you know, homophobia and racism, allowed this guy to get away with this thing. And so the verdict came exactly 4 years after one of the victims was found dead. So it was like the 4 year anniversary. So it's kind of, you know, fitting. And then, so like I had mentioned earlier, in 2019, activists were rallying outside of his apartment demanding, I remember reading this article about this. And like this man still was not being arrested. People had to go out into the streets again, like trying to get actual justice happen, until they went onto the streets and protested outside of his house after Jamel Moore had overdosed in 2000. They had been starting since Jamel Moore was found dead. And so in the Justice Department, they had said, and they had to get a federal case. They had to go even higher. So it wasn't even like local police finally caved in and did anything. They had to keep going up higher to get more attention to it. And they stated that Buck exerted, you know, in the Justice Department statement, they said that Buck exerted power and control over his victims, typically targeting individuals who were destitute, homeless, or struggling with drug addictions. That was part of their statement. And this won't surprise you, but let's play a game. Can you guess? So one of his defense lawyers was also a prosecutor on blank person's case.
Caster.
Actually, I don't know if we want to play this game because I still don't know how I feel about this case as a black person. So there was a prosecutor in the O.J. Simpson case, which is always so like, it's just so weird. I can't.
I thought you were going to say Cosby's case.
Which also would not. Actually, no, the Cosby one I have. I'm more of an adult. I have much more feelings about that. Like a predator go to jail. You like, you know, absolutely. The Simpson one, I just have to like, I don't know. I can't. No comment. It's just there.
That
really
one
bad.
Is tough.
It's bad. I've seen the documentary. Really, I've seen it all. I just can't. It's just a very difficult thing to talk about. It just really is.
I mean, I remember that I moved to this country when that was happening, and I was just like, as a black person, you're rooting for OJ, and that was
right.
it. Like it was,
but
just
it's
like,
again, it came after the heels of Rodney King, and it wasn't. It was more so of what he had represented, and we have seen so many times the justice system, and we still to this day put away innocent black people all the fucking time. And so it had seemed like the same sort of situation was happening, but on the other side, you saw, you know, this black man getting, you know, treatment as if he were a white guy, you know, but that's that fame prize athlete, you know, but he also was someone who ran in those white circles, and similar to, you know, Ed Buck had all these different, you know, sort of connections. So not surprising that the defense lawyer, there's some, you know, which doesn't speak well for either of these folks, but even after Timothy Dean, 55, he had died 18 months later. It took, like I said, an additional 9 months and a near death of another overdose victim for Buck's arrest. So he didn't get arrested. So remember, Dean had died. And then 18 months later, Dean had died 18 months after Jamel Moore. And then it was 9 months later, there was a near death of another overdose victim for Buck, who was arrested. Mind you, there's probably so many other folks, right? This list, like a Harvey Weinstein style fucking list of just folks that this guy, that there's names that we don't even know, or who didn't come forward, right? Or who died and we don't even know how they died or why they died. And so family members and activists finally pushed for Buck's arrest after Moore had died. And so then, again, you had all these activists who were coming out who'd been advocating for years for Buck to be brought to justice. Like I had mentioned, he attacked, you know, these very vulnerable communities because he knew that he could get away with it. As we've said, if you're black, you're queer, you're a sex worker, had possible drug use, society just did not give two fucks about you. Some of these men, they were homeless. Some of them were sex workers. One of them lived in a tent underneath the 105 freeway overpass, and Buck invited him back to his apartment. And he,
oh my God,
right? Like, this is like, this is
predator. It's like a predator. He's just like prowling, looking for people.
100% predator. He's such a predator. And that's why it's very uncomfortable when some of these predators get free. Like, I have issues with Bill Cosby being set free.
Really the thing.
What do you all expect is going to happen? Like the
like
man,
literally, would you,
it's almost, I would even classify this as a mental health issue. Like there's something that he needs deep, deep psychology and counseling away from the rest of society to do whatever processing and healing, that he needs to do. Because as you know, Oprah says, what happened to you? Clearly something happened to Bill Cosby. I don't know what happened. I'm not a doctor, but he needs to go and deal and process with that. Away. I've not seen any examples of remorse or healing, just victimhood, which and Felicia Rashad tweeting out like, ooh, finally, Felicia, Mama Huxtable. Did you see after he was released, she like tweeted something and then she took it back or something? Like she had tweeted.
Yeah, and then because everybody was like, did you just
she had
become
tweeted,
the Dean
like,
at
thank
Howard?
God.
Shit like that? Yeah. She's like, oh, thank God that justice was finally stirred.
Oh, yes.
Or something like that.
Yes,
some shit like
yeah.
that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I was
girl.
Okay.
So she's still paying for that one. It's hard. Sometimes you just don't tweet. Yeah. Sometimes I don't need to know all of your thoughts. But
like, stop.
Yes.
Just stop.
And so they also testified that Buck had enjoyed seeing them get so high they lost control. and that he mm-hmm. would they would you know get
uncomfortable. Like,
and then he had these videos. There was these videos of him, like, assaulting them while they were unconscious. And Dane Brown, so this was the man who had survived the near fatal overdose. He had escaped Buck's drug den of abuse and exploitation and racism, all of those complied, you know, told reporters outside the courthouse, "I didn't think I was going to be believed." That he did not
I
think.
Mean,
again.
And would you blame him?
Right.
Based on everything that we've seen.
Rich,
like,
white.
He wouldn't have been believed.
Yes,
he
absolutely.
He wouldn't have.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Again, this man had been getting away with this for the longest time, right? Mm-hmm. Like, completely. So very similar. And this is like the story. You see this all the time in these predators' behavior. And they keep doing this. And the more marginalized you are, the least likely you feel like you're going to be believed or supported. And I would all say the more that this probably stuff is happening. I think this story is I was only really seeing it now that the verdict happened. I started seeing it a little bit more. But when I remember reading articles about the protests happening, I wasn't seeing that on any other news sources or blogs or da da da. And what it just kind of reminds me of, there's so many other stories to be told, and we have this 24-hour news cycle that is so utterly fucking useless. Y'all talking
it's
about
the same shit over and over
again. Stories, and it's not even real journalism at this point. It's just getting, now let's get this person's opinion about this tweet that was sent out, or now let's get this person's opinion. Now let's get these two people to argue about it. Like, it doesn't, and what becomes is it becomes addicting, and you get further and further down this like rabbit hole, just listening to these other people. There's no news about it. What's the news? What's the story? So this story went unnoticed for so long because everyone's paying attention to all this other, you know, same old repetition nonsense that was going on for so long. But again, of what these folks were representing and then connecting into. And then people in the Democratic Party still, they continue to take this guy's money. They didn't return his money. The media was so afraid to be sued by him that they wouldn't take any action or even just start even reporting on this story. And they would also say, so there just were hundreds. There's finally all this like video evidence and, you know, just all the different, you know, drugs that he would have them do. There were all this, you know, testimony that was happening. And then just to point out that the LA coroner's office originally ruled Moore's death as an accident. And deputies didn't see anything suspicious about this young black man found in a rich white man's home. And it wasn't until Moore's family publicly questioned whether the drugs were self-administered that and protests were organized. So,
yeah,
you know, it's one of those things that it's unfortunate. We got to take, you know, I don't want to sound like the other people. I don't want to sound like I'm asking people to storm the Capitol. But sometimes you got to take justice into your own hands. I mean, for us, they don't need to do anything. Y'all have justice. Guess what? Justice is already in your hands. She's at your charcuterie plate. She's hanging out with you. Like, she's your mama's friend, your mother's friend. Sorry, y'all are friends. Y'all sister friends.
Yeah, there's no. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, that's like a whole nother topic that I'm still wrapping my mind around.
But it is, which is also sidebar. Remember that was this year. The insurrection was this year. Isn't that wild?
Oh my God. It does feel like it was like 3 years ago.
The insurrection happened in January of 2021.
Holy shit.
So that's a whole other thing. But I want to leave with this is that Jasmine Kanick, who's a political strategist who helped organize the protests in the Buck case, she said that she was grateful that the federal authorities took the black victims seriously. And she said that local prosecutors did not. And then she said this: our lives matter, our community matters. And just because someone is unhoused, an addict, maybe a survival sex worker or an escort or HIV positive, does not mean that their lives don't matter. And we should look the other way when they show up dead in a white Democratic donor's home. Uh-huh. He is just one of many Ed Bucks. There are many out there. And
there's so many.
And what I want to commend is the people who were so relentless in making sure that this case got the support that it needed. We'll link this in the show notes, but you can still go there. It's called Justice for Jamel, and that's justice, then the number 4, and then gemmel.org. And they have, the website was like bomb. You could donate, you could buy t-shirts. You could still buy a t-shirt that says fuck Ed Buck. And wear that around, you know, but there's other, I'm sure other causes and other folks and other people who are not getting the attention in the other cases. They're not getting the attention. Our focus is on the wrong people, you know, with this whole entire war on drugs and all this sort of stuff, where those folks just need, those primarily black and brown folks who just need, you know, mental health and healing or drug abuse treatment, not being locked
or
away.
Any support.
A job. anything. Like someone to anything. Say, you can do it. You're looking good. I believe in you. Like, meanwhile, you have all these other predators out there who are out there doing this sort of shit and preying on these on our folks. So
And are supported.
And people look the other way. So I just wanted to give this story its light and its life, and really recognize the lives that were lost in this as well. And just, you know, keep your eyes open, because there's probably someone in your community or in your neighborhood that needs your support as well. So what other stories are we missing from those communities who are constantly pushed to the sidelines? Fuck you, Ed Buck. Stressed, tired, just don't feel like cooking? Well, food that's fast doesn't have to be fast food. Nope, it sure doesn't. Because Freshly offers quality meals without that hard work of prepping, cooking, and cleaning. It's like, I just don't have time. I'm not interested. Because Freshly offers chef-made, nutrient-packed, delicious meals delivered fresh to your door, and no cooking is required. Have I mentioned that no cooking is required? And these taste so good. And ordering is so easy. All you have to do is visit Freshly.com and choose from over 30 delicious, satisfying, better-for-you meals like steak peppercorn, sausage baked panini, one of my personal favorites, or their chicken pesto bowl. Ooh, I gotta check that one out. And now our listeners can try Freshly for just $6.16 per meal. Wow. You can't get that sort of a meal anywhere, at least nothing healthy or nothing that you should be putting in your mouth. So stop searching the internet for healthy foods near me every night and start living life Freshly. I can't recommend Freshly enough. It has been it's literally everything I've been looking for between work, doing the podcast, going to the gym. I don't have time to cook, and other things just get so, I don't know, expensive after a while. I've really enjoyed Freshly. I am hooked, and now I can cook when I really, really want to. And right now, and then just get to enjoy some delicious food. They deliver it straight to my house. I pop it in the microwave, and I'm good to go, eating healthy and looking good. So right now, Freshly is offering our listeners $40 off your first two orders when you go to freshly.com/minority. So stop stressing about dinner. Go to freshly.com/minority for $40 off your first two orders. Once again, that is freshly.com/minority for $40 off your first two orders. Do it.
Welcome back to Fireside Chat on KMAX. With me in studio to take your calls is the dopest duo on the West Coast, Oliver Wong and Morgan Rhodes. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, I'm looking for a music podcast that's insightful and thoughtful, but like also helps me discover artists and albums that I've never heard of.
Yeah, man, sounds like you need to listen to Heat Rocks. Every week, myself and I'm Morgan Rhodes and my co-host here, Oliver Wong, talk to influential guests about a canonical album that has changed their lives.
Guests like Moby, Open Mic Eagle, talk about albums by Prince, Joni Mitchell, and so much more.
Yo, what's that show called again?
Heat Rocks, deep dives into hot records.
Every Thursday on Maximum Fun.
Okay. Pew, 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 pew. Sam's Music Corner. What's going on in the music world?
Well, so I don't know if you've heard much about this situation, but there's, you know, it's interesting actually, because the last time I was here, I talked about Tory Lanez and Megan Thee Stallion.
Yes, that was you. I was so funny because I was reading an article about DaBaby, and that story came up, and I was like, oh yeah, I remember the last time I heard And that was you who were talking about it. Full circle. We're back. It's here a hip hop update. More fuckery in the hip hop industry.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, the fact that I'm coming up with a follow up with this basically exact same type of bullshit. So DaBaby, for those of y'all who don't know, he's a rapper with a very deep voice, which, like, his voice is nice, but his lyrics are fucked up.
God.
He was at Rolling Loud last week in Miami performing in front of 70,000 people. What did you call it? During a Pon de Replay?
During the Pon de Replay.
70,000 people, ooh. James. 70,000 people
okay.
were there.
Okay. Sorry, my brain didn't even collect that because it's... No. Where?
When have you ever been anywhere that has 70,000 people?
Not in the past year and a half or 2 years. Like, I can't even... 70,000, that's a lot. Where was this happening? Miami.
Miami.
I knew it was Florida. Ron DeSantis.
I love Florida, and I love Miami. I mean, I don't love Florida. I love Miami.
There it goes. Miami and Florida are different things.
That's facts. So DaBaby is... he's up there, he's doing his show, and then he has a moment where he has like a sip of something, and he says something to the effect of, if you don't have HIV AIDS or not living with a terminal disease that's going to have you die in 2 to 3 weeks, he said put the equivalent of put your lighters up, because I'm old, but basically he said like shine the light on your phone or some shit like that. Mm-hmm. If your pussy tastes like water, put your phone up. If you're a dude and you're not sucking dick in the parking lot right now, put your phone up. So these three comments, that's not the end of it.
I wish it was.
I wish it was too. And then he brought out Tory Lanez.
Oh no.
He brought out Tory Lanez. Tory Lanez. So this was after Megan Thee Stallion's set. He shot her. No, but not only did he shoot her, Megan Thee Stallion currently has a restraining order against Tory Lanez. Megan Thee Stallion and DaBaby made a song this year called Cry Baby. This year seems like it's 5 years old.
Oh my God.
Like it's been 5 years. But Cry Baby, I'm pretty sure it came out this year. So they had kind of like a whole thing and they fell out. Okay. So they're not performing together anymore. But he essentially took Tory Lanez aside. What happens as a follow-up to DaBaby? DaBaby doubles down, okay? You got people calling him out left and right. What the fuck is going on? First Megan, now this, blah, blah, blah. He's doubling down. He's like, yeah, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to call out people that have HIV. Like, yes, you did.
Well, he even said, he also said, because all these people put their lights up, and he said, that's what's called because I'm a live performer. Look, all those lights went up. Gay or straight, you want to know why? Because even my gay fans don't have fucking AIDS. Like, go fuck yourself.
And which is like, you don't know shit about your fans, one. No. And two, I'm getting ahead of myself. So he brings out Tory Lanez. She has a restraining order against him. He doubles down on all of his comments. He starts to say, oh, I didn't mean to say that about this. But y'all, the LGBTQ folks, y'all could do what you want to do. Okay? I'm going to do me, you do you. All right? Then he comes out with another statement talking about, oh, I just needed to be educated. You are an artist making hundreds of millions of dollars. Well, maybe not hundreds of millions, but tens of millions of dollars. Like, education is literally at your feet. You can have education anytime you want.
Okay, what is he, Matt Damon? Did his daughter have a conversation with him about how...
Oh, my God.
I mean, sidebar, but, like, Matt Damon, like, also... Like, Matt Damon had this, like, grand epiphany. Like, stop.
It's free to shut the fuck up.
Stop talking.
It is free to shut the fuck up.
Stop talking. Who let him talk? I don't know who let him talk. Every time he opens his mouth, and we didn't ask him. No one was even asking him in the interview, hey, Matt Damon, have you had any epiphanies about, you know, not saying, you know, the word faggot? And he just, like, gave this information up. My daughter just educated me because I was saying this joke that I said in this movie. And she's
it's
like, she wrote
bro.
This like letter about how I don't need to say this. And it's like, yeah, Matt Damon. But I'm glad that, but here's my thing. I'm glad that you finally had this epiphany. Welcome to the table. You could have just had that moment private, but this is the thing.
Privately.
Because he's privately. Like, but he wants a cookie. He wants a parade because he had this epiphany. So he's like, it's almost this thing like Trump used to do this too. When Trump would learn something new, he would be like, you know what? The sky is blue. Everybody, I don't know if you knew this, but scientists are saying that. And so Matt Damon is doing that thing. He's like, did you know that we don't say we don't say the F word anymore. And you try to like pawn it off as like, oh, you know, when I grew up, it meant something different. No, wait, you were not running around saying bundle of sticks. You were not running around saying bundle of sticks or calling people cigarettes. You were calling, you were literally using a homophobic derogatory term. That's fine. I'm glad you had this awakening, but you didn't need to like out. We didn't need to go. But that's the thing. He wanted all these accolades of like, I'm growing or whatnot. Like you said, have these conversations with Ben Stiller, your other friends and things like that. Like, welcome to the table.
Or Ben Affleck.
Or Ben Affleck. Who's winning right now. Yeah. But I think it's just like, for me, I just am like, okay, well, welcome to the table and next. Okay.
No, you cannot be at the table. You need to go on timeout. Go and redeem yourself. Go take some classes. Come back in 3 years.
That wasn't enough.
You've learned something. He hasn't learned anything.
He read that his daughter's letter.
Like, what are you? First of all, your daughter should have been with you when you were saying that shit. She would have told you, shut the fuck up. What are you doing? Because it's exhausting. It's exhausting. So the same way that you've got Matt Damon kind of like having people blow smoke up his ass or whatever, telling him that, oh, he has grown. The baby has like different rappers coming out in his defense, one of whom was T.I., who, I don't know if y'all know this, but T.I. was routinely having his daughter's hymen checked every year.
Right.
T.I. was the same person who lets his kid just, like, smoke blunts and, like, has strippers come over to the house. And also, I'm pretty sure has allegations of, like, sex trafficking with him and his wife.
If you just Google T.I. sexual abuse, T.I. and his wife actually have criminal investigations on behalf of multiple women of sexual assault. And T.I. has actually been cut out of, want to get Marvel on this because all roads lead back to Marvel. He's been cut out of the next Ant-Man and the Wasp movie. He got him.
Bye, fool. Goodbye.
Yeah.
You can go.
So I don't know if that's
something that I replaced with Lakeith Stanfield.
I don't know if I want. I don't know if I need T.I. coming to my defense. Everyone you've listed is not someone that is a stellar. They're all trash.
So of course, but the problem. So fuck T.I. I don't give a shit about T.I. The problem is other people give a shit about T.I. T.I. is a producer. T.I. is out here making moves. He's got money.
Still,
he's got influence.
With these allegations.
Yes. I mean, he's producing. He is in places that people want to be. I mean, he's not a Jay-Z. Okay. But none of the things that he is dealing with right now have actually, like when we say cancel, that fake cancel culture, that's kind of what he's dealing with. He's not actually being, I mean, besides him being removed. I mean, now it's starting. Mm-hmm. Now it's starting. Mm-hmm. Okay. But up until now, so T.I., I mean, the reason why I bring up T.I. was because he said that if Lil Nas X can kick his shit, in what? In peace. James, when has Lil Nas X ever had peace? Before you go there, if Lil Nas X can kick his shit in peace, then the baby should be able to do the same thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about that, the reason why I wanted to bring that up is because there's this false equivalency where you've got a rapper in Lil Nas X who's literally dancing, having naked people around him, just like literally every fucking rapper does.
And that's what he's
has
doing.
Sexy he's, naked people in his video.
He's doing this
around him.
Yeah, he's literally doing the same exact thing. And he's actually even blowing it up even further to even just show the ridiculousness of it. He's like, well, I'm a rapper. This is what us rappers do. I just like men.
Exactly.
I'm just replacing what you would normally see with women, and I'm doing it just with men. And folks
that's
are just losing their shit. And it is interesting too, like that false equivalency thing. I've been seeing it a lot in the hip-hop community, is that there's so many folks who are just like, well, you know that whole entire like, oh, we're gonna sort of like live and let live, but you know, we also gotta let folks who, you know, DaBaby's gotta, you know, we gotta love him for who he is. Like, so it's like, you know, you can be you know, it's almost like this idea that you have to accept, if we're gonna accept gay and trans people, then we also have to accept people who don't like that. Right.
Except that it's
that's what they're saying.
Well, that's what they're saying. And then that dislike turns into people like Ed Buck being able to literally go prowl the streets for black men and them not being able to get any kind of justice for it. That turns into like DaBaby saying something in 2021 about how AIDS is going to kill somebody in 2 to 3 weeks in 2021, as if.
Right.
that was anywhere near true. Yeah. But you know what? His listener base will listen to that, and they will take it as fact. Those are then people that are going to be in school with your kids. Mm-hmm. That's going to be your daughter's boyfriend. That's going to be your boyfriend, your son's girlfriend, your son's boyfriend, who's going to be kicking it there. I mean, the baby has gay fans. The baby has gay fans.
Yeah, because gay people are everywhere. So, and I think one of the things that is really kind of, taking like Lil Nas X, like I give snaps off to him. And I was saying to you, it's been such a journey. I thought, I'm a 36-year-old black gay man. I'm like, oh, he's making me like confront things that I didn't know that I still needed to confront. Every time Lil Nas X puts something out, it's very jarring for me because I've never seen like black queerness in a mainstream way, like over sexualized black queerness in a mainstream music sense has just never existed before. And so like when I see also too, I will say like
in hip hop, no less.
Right. So like, you know, he has his music video Industry Baby. They're like full on dancing naked in the showers or whatnot. And it's just like, I'm like clutching my pearls. His SNL performance was where it's like gay men dancing. And I'm usually seeing that like when I choreograph something for drag queens at a nightclub, not watching SNL. And I just like almost feel so exposed. And I will say like even like I think what Lil Nas X does really well is he is forcing us as a society, everybody, to confront all the things. Like even folks within the gay community are just like are blast putting, even specifically I would say some black gay folks are putting him on blast because they're like, oh, you know, you don't have to be so like overly, you know, out there with it. And he's just like, you know what, I'm just out here doing my own thing. And so someone was saying, talking about, you know, again, because Lil Nas X is confronting things, and it's making people, he's going head on, it's making people feel uncomfortable because their own fears. And someone tweeted, they're like, you know, you're so insecure about your sexuality that you're over here compensating for it. You know, gay people who know themselves don't constantly have to remind everyone that they're gay. Take a look at yourself in the mirror. And then Lil Nas X clapped back. He's like, you're right. I am insecure about my sexuality. I still have a long way to go. I've never denied that. But when you're conditioned by society to hate yourself your entire life, it takes a lot of unlearning with sexually what I want to do. And then he said, y'all hate yourself so much. Y'all live your lives trying your best to appease straight people. Y'all are uncomfortable with what I do because y'all are afraid to be uncomfortable with you. Work on yourselves. I love who I am, and I do whatever I decide to do to get there. I broke me. I realized in that tweet, and again, I've not once hated on Lil Nas X. I'm like, go ahead, you do your thing. I'm not watching, but like I support you, which is wild to me because I'm like, I should be one of the biggest Lil Nas X fans because I'm like, finally, it's me. I don't have to see myself through an avatar of Janet or Beyonce or Britney. I can see something so much closer to who I am, but it's so scary because I've never seen it before. I would say like, even for you, you've seen black women on stage being their best selves, right? Still having a fight to get half as much to get, you know, still that struggle. But I've never, and it's so jarring to me. And I was like, oh, because I, as comfortable, it's still that journey that I still personally am going with that I did not realize that I was on. But I really have compartmentalized my black queerness is over here. And then my mainstream life, in a sense, you know. And now it's for us all to see. And it's very, I'm going through my own experience. And then I was like, but, you know, I do have an issue. Like, I still haven't seen that music video with him and the devil. I just don't like fucking with devil things. It's just, I grew up in a spiritual house. I grew up in a Baptist household. I consider myself to be spiritual. I just don't need that in my life. But what it is he's confronting us all with whatever it is that we are comfortable and uncomfortable with. So I just, and you know, he still is going through his own struggles. Like, these, you know, tweets or things that people say, like, they affect him. I can't even imagine 22 years old and his, you know, exploring his sexuality is in front of the entire, and his own identity is in front of the entire world to see. I did not have to go through that when I was 22. Mm-hmm. I got to do it in the club, in the dark.
Well, I mean, and the thing of, he's just himself, you know? And I think, like, of course, obviously he's a performer. There's a lot of campiness in his, you know, in his setup, in his kind of like set design, in his costumes. Mm-hmm. I mean, in his productions, all of it is over the top, which is awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, we love over the top, right?
We love
and I think it. Honestly, like, it's amazing. And I think, I mean, the thing about Lil Nas X that I will never get over, okay, is that the music is good. It's yeah. just good.
I mean, at the end it's of the day, good. The music is good, which is why even
like Industry Baby is a motherfucking bop. Like it's good.
Which is even why country music was like, okay, we can fuck with this guy because he wrote a bomb ass country music song. And okay. I mean, he had to jump through some hoops to get back on. He had to bring in Billy Ray Cyrus to get back onto the country Billboard charts because country was gonna be racist. But because they're like, oh wait, he's black. Oh, he can't be on here. Oh, this isn't a real country song. And then Billy Ray Cyrus was like, it is a country song. I'm going to sing with it. People were like, oh, okay, we could fuck with this again.
I know, which, by the way, Billy Ray Cyrus, didn't he also have to kind of come back from grace? He was, like, wilding for a while, right?
Because of his daughter?
Or is that a different dad? Is that a different dad?
I don't even know.
I don't
a different
know.
Country dad? It's a little not sexy because if you haven't seen his BET Awards, again, his performance, every time I watch one of his performances, I go on this journey of, I'm like, I clutch my pearls. I feel so exposed. I feel so seen. And then by the end of it, I'm like, okay, all right, yeah, go mm-hmm. off. Okay, yeah, mm-hmm. when you doing it, okay, we're all out here seeing it. It's but like he's and he kisses these two dancers, these sexy ass chocolate dancers. I mean, and he said on commenting on it, he goes, "This is my space now too." And to do that at the BET Awards, it is just like, I mean, what a pioneer. And I can't even imagine the anxiety and stress that he was going through leading up to that. And then even after, he talks about it mm-hmm. in a new article, I think, with Out Magazine.
Yeah, I mean, so Lil Nas X, I think, somebody said something to the effect of, like, now that we have, like, dudes that are like gay rappers and then like women rappers, do we need cishet rappers?
We don't.
Because honestly, I don't think we do.
You're so right.
I don't think we do.
My favorite MCs are female rappers. I will obsess with female rappers. I can sing all of their lyrics because for the most part, I won't be offended by them. I will say I'm calling out Nicki Minaj in the Flawless remix song. She does say like, she says something homophobic in it. She's like, if you're not thrown with me and B, you're riding with Team D, as if like if you suck dick, you're, you know, gay and effeminate. Like, so. But anyway, sorry. But yes, you're right. Do we need get back on your hype train? I'm a guess.
I don't think we do. Yeah. I don't think we do. Because one of the other things that DaBaby provided us with, which I wish that I just like stayed in the ground somewhere, was Throat Baby. Have you seen that video, James?
I'm sorry. What did you say? This sounds nat. Is this?
It's called.
I feel like
Throat Baby.
This is. I feel like I need. I'm at work right now. I'm at work right now. This seems unsafe. Is this? What are you sending me? What's this link?
Okay, so
NSFW.
Don't watch it. I'll just describe to you what happened.
I don't know if that's safe either. If you're listening at work, please put some earphones on now.
Trigger warning. Yes.
Sexy
yes.
trigger warning.
Not safe for work. Yes. In the video, so there's this porn star, her name is Tayana Trump. Yeah. In the video, she has an avalanche of cum coming out of her mouth. And the baby is skating on. So it wasn't his song, actually. It was a featuring.
Oh.
But he was in the remix. He was in the remix, and he is skating on. He's like basically doing the slide on this, like, this cum avalanche coming out of his mouth.
Lovely.
And then you've got people, you literally have people saying, I do not want my children watching Lil Nas X kiss.
Yeah. Kiss.
A dude. I don't want him to do the devil's lap dance. That trumps the cum avalanche.
Cum avalanche. That's fine. That's fine. It could be milk. Maybe it's milk. Maybe milk does somebody good. 100%.
I mean,
it's again, but it's like, it's this idea of like, you know, anything homosexual is literally immediately NC-17, not right for the kids. But like gay
kids
is not
gay.
Automatic. Yes, exactly.
Also, kids are
and
gay.
Kids
there
are gay.
Kids out there who are gay.
That kid in front of you, probably gay. One in six of Generation Z is queer on the spec, is coming out as queer. And it could, the queer agenda is working, folks. So. We're doing
And
it.
I would just like to remind, I mean, I think that this audience is probably pretty with it, but just in case you got your cousin listening to this, let's just say that people are coming out more.
Yeah.
It's not like gay Nothing's people are new. A new phenomenon. Yeah. It didn't just come out in the 2000s.
And
like,
that's the thing about what is so interesting about Lil Nas X is like, he's not the first gay rapper. He is the first out gay rapper. Many
Let's
of y'all
talk about that.
As the Boondocks did such an amazing episode. I don't know if you ever saw it, but the Boondocks did a really great episode about these. It was like the episode was like these two rappers who were like had this beef with each other and they were fighting and they hated each other and they'd write songs about each other. And then you turn out by the end of the episode, they're actually in love. And all those songs that they were talking about, it was actually because they were in love. And I was like, oh, Boondocks is touching on something that's going on in the industry that, okay, now some of this is making sense. You're right. There are these gay rappers through there on the down low. I think it shows the work that we still absolutely need to do within the community that I think that we have come further, but it's so surface level. The work is it's almost superficial to a sense.
It is
the work that we've done in the black
There's
community.
There's no humanizing in it. There's no humanizing in it. Okay, because I mean, right now we're talking about Lil Nas X. He's like this like pretty 22-year-old who's like got abs for days
right.
It's like amazing or whatever. But you got Lil Nas X in your community right now.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying.
You who got does Lil not Nas have X abs for days and Thank who's you. Not cute. But you know what? They still need support and love
they
and
still
rep.
Need support.
You're cute.
They're
I'm just kidding. I'm
also,
sorry.
I mean, maybe,
you are cute.
Maybe not just. maybe not.
I don't want a pretty shame.
X, but I'm sure. Pretty shame. But I feel
shame.
Like, you know, there are people who have things to offer out there and they have a voice and have things to contribute and they get overlooked.
Yeah.
The value of what they have to say gets overlooked because of their identity.
Yeah.
And I mean, I feel, and then you've got people like DaBaby and people who act and think like DaBaby who are given center stage, but are saying shit that's simply infactually true.
Right.
And
Full
I think that when you're talking about, you know, like actually having substance and actually talking about things that matter and are real as someone who is like an artist who is out there having literal tens of thousands of people listening to the shit that you have to say, there's responsibility there, you know?
Yeah.
You've got like a rapper who comes out who also defended DaBaby, Boosie. That guy he paid for a stripper to perform fellatio on his 12-year-old.
SFW. You could say it sucked dick. Good morning.
Exactly.
Good morning.
Like, am I allowed to say that?
Good morning in England.
Am I allowed to say that? Yeah, so he paid for it was either a prostitute or a stripper to suck his 12-year-old son's
Nope. And good night, ladies and gentlemen. It's been a great show.
To make sure that he wouldn't be gay.
Oh, see.
And my
that's
thing is,
fuck
it's like
up a kid.
So here's my thing.
And the stripper.
If you are not gay,
oh, that's illegal.
That's I mean, on so many fronts. If you are not gay, if you have no idea what being gay is about, if that is something that is so far removed from the concept of who you are as a person,
you're not.
Why
thinking about
are you
it.
Going through such great lengths?
Yeah.
And this is not like an isolated phenomenon. There are many people who do this. Again, for all the boosies that you've got in like actually like in the limelight doing this, you've
There's
got people,
people
doing
down
this
the street
everywhere doing that shit.
Yeah, 100%.
You know what I mean?
And like it goes back to your thing is that there are these folks who have these platforms have almost they do have a responsibility into the things that they're saying and the things that they're putting out there. And then we also as consumers have a responsibility into what it is that we are consuming. The concerts that we're paying to go to, or the music that we're listening to on Spotify, because they get a little bit of kickback from that, you know, as well. So we as consumers also have a responsibility. So we all need to do is watch all Lil Nas X music videos, all Lil Nas X, like, you know, all that music, and put it right.
And call out like the casual. I think that I don't want to say silent killer, but the subtle killer is the casual homophobia and the casual sexism. For all y'all who are listening to shit at work, pay attention to like those microaggressions, that casual, the casualness of that, because that actually is very instrumental in people being harmed. That is not something that is a separate phenomenon from you. It is not existing in a different sphere, in a different planet. Like literally every single one of those microaggressions contributes to this ridiculous culture that says that somebody, in order to prevent their 12-year-old son from being gay, is going to have a grown woman go and suck on his penis.
Okay. Well, I think that's the last time I want to hear that sentence.
Oh, I'm
but
sorry.
Yes.
I apologize.
No,
sorry to the audience. I'm being very
But I just like, okay, I've heard 12... penis suck too.
I'm sorry.
Too many times.
But you gotta know the truth. You
yes,
gotta
right.
know what's
we
out there.
We do need to know what's happening. And I think we got it. I think the moral of today's story is fuck you, Disney. Fuck you, DaBaby. And fuck you, Ed Buck. I think that's, I think those are the three. I think those are the.
Fuck homophobia. Fuck patriarchy. Fuck white supremacy.
Fuck it all.
Yes. And everybody out there who's moving the needle, who's pushing. Who's talking, who's fighting the good fight. Shout out to you. Thank you.
Keep doing it.
That's right.
And call me by your name. Well, that is the show. So great to have Samantha on the show. And you can check out her show and other shows that she's involved in. Check out Modern Manhood on the Orisha Peluda, wherever you get your podcast, along with her podcast, Masculinity Podcast as well. Okay, so a quick note. This is actually not a fact check, but just something I actually meant to mention throughout the entire episode when we're talking about Lil Nas X and just the lack of props giving towards queer blackness. As we know that queer black art is all throughout all of music and hip hop from behind the scenes. And it's really heartbreaking that when it has the opportunity for Lil Nas X to grab center stage, there's so much kerfuffle. But we just all know that black queer folks have been throughout all parts of hip hop, through the culture, through the music, through the art, behind the scenes. And it's just really heartbreaking that like it's still the struggle bus. When here it is coming to the forefront, everyone wants to act like they've never seen a queer person before in the community when it's like, okay, we know there's all people behind the scenes who've been doing all kinds of things and in front of the scenes, and we're in the space to be able to say it. So go off, Little Necks. Little Necks? Go off, Little Nas X. That's what I call him. Because we like that. We tight like that. Little Nicks, Little Nas X. This is the little thing. Leave me alone. I'm not that old. Well, that is going to do it for us. We're going to get up on out of here. Don't forget, you can tweet at us at Minority Corner and also on Instagram. Very active over there, more so than the Twitter, if I'm just, you know, being honest. You can also email minoritycorner@gmail.com. Ask us anything. We'll answer it. And you can also write a review on Apple Podcasts. So big thank you to Sarah Brown, our editor and /producer, and Lori Fowler, our production coordinator, working behind the scenes to do all this good. And a big thank you to all of our listeners and all of our Maximum Fun members as well. We can't do the show without you. And thank y'all for listening to Minority Corner, because together, we're the majority. Have a fabulous week.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.